We're up to letter 11, which is fully in the second half of the book, right? We said that the 19 letters is basically split into two halves. Half one was going through the Hashkafas HaTorah, half two is going to be going through the Mitzvos. And then once we get to 15 and on, basically 15 through 19, we're going to be applying a lot of the ideas we spoke about to the times that our first was dealing with. A lot of the stuff, you know, very, very relevant to what we're actually dealing with right now, 2018. So what Hirsch is going to do, and as he explained in the previous letter, was he's going to go through the six categories of mitzvot that we spoke about. Those were Toros, Eidos, Mishpatim, Chukim, Mitzvot, and Avodah. And he's going to talk about which mitzvot are still relevant nowadays and explain where they come from, what the ideas we're meant to be taking out of them are, and present them in a very different way than I guess we're used to hearing. Definitely for a lot of them. So what we're going to do now is we're gonna start with three of the categories. We're going to deal with Toros, skip over Eidos, then do Mishpatim and Chukim. That's the way we first ordered letter 11. And we'll go through what we're going to try to use the Mekoros and Tanakh that he's giving us and see what are the psukim that he's dealing with and how does he explain or how does he present the mitzvos. It's very interesting how they match up. But we're going to start off with something that is not actually from Hirsch. This is something that I've been putting together. I guess you could say it's on Hirsch's, not his command, but it's on Hirsch's suggestion. Hirsch wrote into the Choriv of into the introduction to Choriv, which is the book that we're going to be second, the continuation, the much larger version of the 19 letters in the book we're going to be using for the next couple of letters here in the Shir. He says at the very, very end of the intro, in the end of the foreword, it is only essays which I venture to offer, not a complete treatise. Not a complete treatise. I shall be happy if here and there someone more gifted than I am, finds a thought which he considers worth pursuing, taking up the work at the point where my powers come to an end. I shall be happy if but one of the noble sons and daughters of my people is prompted by my book to break away from the currents of the present age and take refuge with that which alone is permanent in a fluctuating world, namely with God and His Word. So Hirsch says, I don't think that I've exhausted every single possible makor and every single possible idea which there are to find in these mitzvos. That's an idea that comes up over and over again. Everything that we're doing here is conjecture. Obviously, it's guided conjecture. We're trying to see as many of the details of the halacha and as many of the agadatos and the midrashim which flesh out some of the ideas that we're working with to see if we're actually approaching the full meaning of Dvar Hashem. But then at the end of the day, the most sure we can be of our ideas is always going to be 99%. We spoke about that last year. So Hirsch says, I'm suggesting ideas. I'm throwing things out there. And I wish, I hope, obviously I don't see myself as more gifted than Hirsch was, the language that he uses. But he challenges us. He challenges the thinking young men and women of Israel to whom he dedicated his svarim. He challenges us to look into the Torah ourselves, look into these ideas ourselves, find the halakhas ourselves, and try to figure out what ideas is Hashem building in and kind of extending the work that he started. He put out a bunch of ideas, and obviously he has hundreds of makoros for that. They actually found an early copy of Choriv that he was working on with makoros and with notes in the margin. And apparently there are notes from all over Shas, all over Midrashim. He has notes from the Zohar. Apparently there were over 100 quotes from Zohar on the section on Bris Milah alone. He was obviously holding in all this stuff. I'm nowhere near that, but he wants us, the thinking young men and women of the Jewish people, to continue where he left off, to take his work that he started and to work with it. So we're going to try to do something similar, hopefully similar to what we're first trying to do throughout the letters, throughout Choriv, just to try to illustrate what principle or what ideas he was doing or what system he was working with. And then we're going to jump into the actual categories of mitzvos, and we'll go through the mitzvos the way he divides them up. In order to do that, we're gonna use some ideas from Maseches Sukkah, or the mitzvah of Sukkah in general. It's the Maseches that we did here in HaKotel in Elzman. So hopefully we're going to be pretty familiar with some of the ideas that are coming up. The first thing that comes off right off the bat is the minimum height for a sukkah. It shows up in the opening daffin of Maseches Sukkah. Anybody remember where the makor for the minimum, what is the minimum size of a sukkah? 10 tefachim, right? The minimum size needs to be above 10 tefachim. The staff needs to be above 10. What's the makor for that din? What's the source in the Gemara? Okay, good. So the first thing the Gemara suggests is the Aron. How can the Aron be a makor for 10 tefachim? It's 9 tefachim of Aron space, 1 tefach of kapores. So therefore, we know that Hashem was never yored lemata me'asara, and therefore, that's how we see that 10 tefachim creates a separate rishus, which applies to sukkah. It's a very random din. What assumption right there is the Gemara making? It's a very important assumption the Gemara is making about our sukkah.
It's a rishus.
Okay, it has to be a rishus, but what kind of rishus? Specifically a rishus that? If Hashem can't make it underneath Asara, therefore the sukkah needs to be at least up to, and then tzchach above, 10 tefachim. What assumption is the Gemara making? If that's the calculus we're working with, it seems to be, we're assuming Hashem needs to get into our sukkah, even just like a tiny little hair's breadth, Hashem needs to be able to get into the 10th tefachim of our sukkah. So our minimum height is, get to 10 and put the staff on top, Hashem is able to be nichnas lifnim. That's amazing. Hashem, the Shekhinah, could get into our sukkah. That's really, really cool. Also, just the fact that we're using the Aron HaKodesh and the Kodesh HaKodashim as the Makor, that's pretty interesting. Then there's all back and forth in the Gemara, this, that. We end up saying we need a new Makor. We need a different idea. So, what are we going to learn from? Instead of learning from the Aron itself, we're going to learn from the Kruvim. Kruvim are really cool. There were two Kruvim made. There were the Kruvim in the Mishkan and Kruvim in Shlomo HaMelech's Mikdash. And both times, the ratio, the size of Kruvim to the full height of the open space in the Kodesh HaKodashim itself was the same ratio. It was 1 to 3. It was 10 amos to 30 amos in Shlomo's Mikdash, and we know it was 60 tefachim of height space, of floor to ceiling space in the Mishkan. So that means, we also know, like we just said, the Aron itself was 10 tefachim tall, and the Kruvim were sitting on top of the Aron. So how much space does that leave from the top of the Aron to the top of the wings of the Kruvim? That's 10 tefachim, right? 10 and 10 is the 20. 20 to 60 is that 1 to 3 ratio, exactly what we're looking for. So we know that there was 10 tefachim of space from the top of the wings of the Kruvim to the top of the Kapores, 10 tefachim. And the Lashon that the Pasuk uses, describing the wings, is that they were sochachin bekanfehem. It uses the word, the Lashon of schach there. And now we have a connection to sukkah. Schach describes something over the space of 10 tefachim. So too, our schach and sukkah needs to be a space over 10 tefachim. Now let's look at this makor, the second makor. What do we know happened between the wings of the Kruvim in the Mishkan? The Shekhinah was shorer. That's where the Shekhinah spoke to Moshe. That exact makom from between the wings of the Kruvim, from underneath the wings of the Kruvim, that's where Hashem said to Moshe. So again, we have two makoros within the space of a daf and a half, for that's the amount of the space that the Gemara needs for the whole Shaka Vataria to get here. We have two makoros pointing to this exact same idea, that the Shekhinah is shorah inside of our sukkos, and that's the makor for the minimum size, for the minimum space that needs to be had inside of our sukkos. Later on Zayin Amud Beis, we have Isakosa al ha'aronis ha'paroches. Not only were the Kruvim misochachim on top of the Aron, but the paroches, the thing which divided between the Aron and the rest of the Kodesh, between the Kodesh HaKodesh and the Kodesh, was also describing Schach. So the Aron itself had Schach over it also. That's the shita for a different din that we don't pass in life, that the walls should matter for sukkah. But again, it's the same idea showing up again. We seem to be centralizing the sukkah, or comparing the sukkah with the mikdash in a very strong way. Next in, fast forward a couple of daf. So the mitzvah of sukkah applies. Well, let's ask, when does the mitzvah of sukkah apply? Is it a day mitzvah, a day night mitzvah, a night mitzvah? What? No, definitely not a makor. Because we know, no question, the Gemara ends up concluding that it's a day and night mitzvah, right? It's 24 hours for a full week, or 8 days if you live in Chutz Laaretz. Question is, how did we know that? Where did that come from? The Gemara says we have two different makoros to learn it from. One makes a lot of sense, at least at first glance. What's the one that makes a lot of sense? We should learn it from lulav, the other sukkah mitzvah. Lulav only applies during the day. It's a sukkah mitzvah. Sukkah is a sukkah mitzvah. Sukkah should only apply during the day also. Makes a lot of sense. We're keeping things kind of localized. The Torah talks about these two things are sukkahs. Maybe the mitzvahs of sukkah should be based on the same time. What's the other potential makor that the Gemara brings up? Why should we think that sukkahs is a day and night mitzvah? This comes out of nowhere. Well, Miluim. Miluim was, as the Gemara says, a very temporary mitzvah. It only applied for the 7 days where they inaugurated what building? There it is again. that only for those 7 days when they inaugurated the Mishkan, we have this thing called the Miluim. The Kohanim were told, were commanded to spend all their both the day and the night, spend all their time sitting in the entrance to the Mishkan. So to the Lut, the Sukkah, should be both a day and nighttime mitzvah. Now, like, let's take a step back. Why is it at all shayach to learn mitzvahs Sukkah from the Miluim? Miluim is something that happened thousands of years ago. Sukkah is something which is supposed to happen every single year as a commemoration to the Ananiya Kavod, or the Sukkahs we built in the Midbar. What shaykhis does it have to the Mishkan? But like we just said a couple of minutes ago, we already saw a couple of strong connections to the Mikdash itself, or the Mishkan itself, to the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So once we're starting this theme, it's not so crazy to say that we have a third connection to the Mishkan and the Mikdash. The makor for the Zman of the Mitzvah, the fact that it's both day and night, is a third makor for us that there's some connection between Sukkah and Mikdash. We paskin that we learn from the Miluim, as opposed to the what we would have thought was the more logical source, learning from the Lulav, from the Lulav itself, from Dalamina. Next, we're continuing through the Gemara. We encounter the din of Atzei Sukkah Asurin Kol Shiva. Back and forth as to what that means. Machlokas Rambam and the Rush. You gotta know what the details are. But where does that din come from? Is it talking about the stach? Is it talking about the walls? Fine, that's a din in the Gemara. But Kishem Shechol Shem Shamayim Alach Agiga. The Gemara quotes a pasuk in. This is the drasha that it gives it. Kishem shechol, shem shemayim ala chagiga. The same way, there's a halos shem shemayim. There's this aspect of kedusha on a karban chagiga. Kach chal shem shemayim ala sukkah. So too, shem shemayim is chal in the sukkah, and therefore they're asurim kol shiva. You're not allowed to get any hana from the walls or the schach of the sukkah over the course of sukkahs. Just because the Torah used the words chag hasukos, I think chag hasukos tasa l'chash yivas yamim, therefore we should take the word chag, which means holiday, and be dorish it to mean chagiga, a karban. Who's reading the Torah that way? Who are these rabbis who are just like messing things around in the psukim? The psukim say what they mean. It's talking about a holiday, the holiday of sukkahs. You should make sukkos, buildings, over the holiday of sukkahs. Who said it has anything to do with a karban? That comes out of nowhere. But let's zoom out again. What's the only other building that we're aware of where there's a din of me'ila, or there's a din of kachim, on the walls of the structure? Beis HaMikdash, right? There's that thing in Gemara Pesachim, if I remember correctly, where there was the discussion about the shade that you get from the walls of the Mikdash. Maybe there should be me'ila extended to that, because you're getting hana from the walls of the Mikdash. The walls were built with Hekdash money. There's me'ila on the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. So now we have two structures where there's some sort of me'ila. There's a shade shamayim that's chal on the walls of the structure, enclosing the space inside. The Beis HaMikdash on the one hand, and our sukkos on the other hand. That's connection number four between sukkah and Mikdash. Next we have, we're at Chav Zayin and Beis now. We're just moving through Dafim. We have Machlokes, Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer says, the same way you need to own your lulav, right, that's the beginning of the third parak, you need to own your own lulav, so too, you need to own your sukkah. You are not allowed to walk into a neighbor's sukkah and just use that for your mitzvah. You need to own the sukkah that you're mechayim the mitzvah with. The Chachamim seem to accept the principle, they seem to accept the connection, but they have a different source which rejects it. It's like, nice idea, but we have Gzeres HaKasuv that rejects that. What's their Gzeres HaKasuv? Kol ha'ezrach bi Yisrael yeshvu basukos. It's written as sukkas, it's written chaser without that vav, so it has, if you read it, it could be read as singular. Kol Yisrael ruin leshev b'sukkah achas. Theoretically, the entire Jewish people could sit in one sukkah. Obviously, that wouldn't work as a shutfos. There's way too many people for everybody to have a chelek, an actual value of the sukkah. So it must be we're borrowing one really rich guy who made a huge sukkah. We're all borrowing his sukkah. Clearly, you're able to use a sukkah she'ula. In the context of the Regalim, what is this line remind you of? What's another time where the entire Kol Beis Yisrael, where the entire Jewish people, is getting together in one place? Ali Regal going up to the Mikdash. So again, the fact that specifically on Sukkot, the way we know a Sukkah Shulah is okay is because of this drasha that comes out of nowhere. Kol Ezrach B'Yisrael Yeshu B'Sukkot. Everybody's ruin Leshev B'Sukkah Achas. We have this idea of everybody getting together in one enclosed place and sharing Sukkot together. That's very reminiscent of what we did every single time we were Ali Regal and got together in the Mikdash. Beautiful. I think that's five. If I'm right, I'm counting right. That's 1, 2, 3, 4. Four, five? We're five, yeah.
Wasn't Sukkot part of
Ali Regal? Yeah, definitely was one of them. They definitely had sukkos in Yerushalayim, but the mitzvah of building sukkos is definitely applies everywhere outside of Yerushalayim. So you're right, it's part of the system anyway, but maybe you can say it's extending, right? I guess we'll get to that in a second. What's the idea of sukkos? We'll get to that. Next, we have the mashal, the famous mashal of what happens when it rains on sukkos. Anybody remember the mashal that the Gemara gives? Right, it's like an Eved who walks into his master's room. He's gonna be mosaic. His coast is gonna dilute his wine for him. One of the things that a servant can do for a master. And the master is not interested. He doesn't want this Eved to serve him right now. And he knocks over. He pours the water into the Eved's face. It's a powerful imagery. But what kind of scene is that mashal setting for us when we walk into our sukkah? First of all, who's inside? The Adon, right? Who's the Adon? Hashem. So Hashem is sitting inside of our sukkah waiting for us to come inside. Is the picture that we're being painted. And then when Hashem makes it rain, kicking us out of the sukkah, it's like he's pouring that water back down on us and sending us out of the sukkah. So again, who is found inside of our sukkah? Hashem. Where is Hashem generally found? Where do we usually talk about Hashem being located if we're talking about like a physical location? Hashem is found, again, in the Mikdash. So that mashal itself, as much as it's talking about our sukkah, it's reminding us or bringing us back to or pointing us back to the Mikdash, the Mishkan. Hashem being located not just in the Mikdash or the Mishkan, but in the Kodesh HaKodesh, in the place where Hashem's Shechina, we can say, is centralized, is localized. That's number six. One more, I'm not so sure about this one. This is a little bit like drushy. So maybe it's like not. We'll leave it at six. This is like kind of a nice, more Hasidish Torah idea. According to the Shita that says, Sukkos is Zecher L'Anani HaKavod. Obviously, that's something that needs to be analyzed also. Is it Zecher L'Anani HaKavod? Is it Sukkos Mamish? How do those two Shitas go together? That's something which should envelop the entire Sukkos of Sukkah. But Anan reminds you, the Anan by Sukkah reminds me of another Anan. Where do we have another Anan showing up? And really, it was every Sukkah, so it was like 5 days earlier. What happens 5 days before Sukkah? What?
You buy the sheep.
That's Pesach. And that's 4 days. Right? What happens every single year 5 days before Sukkah? Sukkah is Tesvav of Tishrei? Yom Kippur, right? So what Anan shows up 5 days before Sukkah does? What Anan plays a very central role in the Yom Kippur Avodah? Yes, thank you. V'chisa anan haketores esakaporis. So where does that anan show up? This is drishy, I warned you. Right? This is very drishy. The anan haketores is in the Kodesh HaKodashim. That was the one time a year the Kohen Gadol was allowed to go in, and the central thing that he did there was...
In the Gra says he could go in whenever he wanted.
He said that Aaron HaKohen could go in whenever he wanted to. The Gra's pshat in Achrimos is that Aaron could go whenever he wanted to, as long as he did the Seder Avodah of the Mikdash of Yom HaKippur or Yom HaKippurim. For us, it was only on Yom Kippur when we did the Avodah. So the one time a year, Kohen Gadol could go in. The central thing that he did in there was the Haktaras HaKetores, and the idea was that this cloud of smoke came up and enveloped the Aaron and him, and he walked out. It was a huge deal. V'chisa Anan HaKetores HaKapores. And not only the Anan connects us, but what's that first word, V'chisa? What happens if you rearrange the letters just a tiny bit? It's drushy. If you rearrange the letters of V'chisa, what do you end up with?
Sukkah.
You end up with a sukkah. Oh my gosh, so sukkos that Hashem enveloped us in the Midbar, might be showing up first in the Kodesh HaKodashim, and then again, 5 days later, when we build our sukkos. We have Anan, V'chisa, a sukkah. That means I need to do a little bit more research on, see if anybody actually says anything like that, but we have six very strong, halachically oriented connections from a sukkah that we build every single year, we've been building for thousands of years, and the Beis HaMikdash, and not just the Beis HaMikdash, but even the Kodesh HaKodesh, two connections to the Aron. We have the Kol Yisrael Rumin Leshev B'Sukkah Achas, the Shem Shemayim, Chol Shem Shemayim, Keshem Shechol Shem Shemayim Al Chagiga, Ka Chol Shem Shemayim Al HaSukkah. We're not just putting together like nice, cute ideas. We're looking at the halachos of Sukkah, where those halachos come from, and then saying what idea, what message is the Torah, is Hashem, our Chazal, trying to give us. Beautiful idea. We built up this whole metaphor of you walk into your sukkah, what are you like, or which personality are you really emulating? 5 days ago, when we had the Mikdash, every single Jew got together in Yerushalayim, in the Azara, and watched one person go into that one place and hoped he was successful, hoped he was able to intercede on behalf of the Jewish people. The Kohen Gadol going to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Were people really active participants? Not so much. Everybody was there waiting, hoping, davening, but they didn't really get the opportunity to be fully involved. They were there standing and watching. And then we go home, and 5 days, we're going to come back for Aliyah LeRegel, like Eli said. We build ourselves sukkos. The connections that the Gemara is bringing up might be telling us, see yourself as a Kohen Gadol walking into your own personal mikdash and celebrating sukkos. I think we're not going to go into the next section. The next section has three very strong, again, going through the Gemara and sukkos, this is the third and fourth program, three very strong connections between Dal and Minim and Korbanos. Which on its own would have been like weird and surprising, very, very strange. But in the context of Sukkah being a mikdash, it makes perfect sense. Not only are you a Kohen Gadol going to your own personal mikdash, now we have Dal and Minim. I don't know how many people have this minog, but my family, Tobias' family, has the minog. It's so weird that they just match up like that. We have the minog to Davka try to do Dal and Minim inside the Sukkah. With this picture, this is unbelievable. It's a Kohen Gadol taking korbanos and doing an avoda inside the sukkah. Everything comes together. The imagery that the Gemara is setting up for us in the halacha, not just these nice ideas that kind of flow out of whatever they flow out of. This is the halachos of the mitzvah. These are things that we're doing every single time we do these mitzvahs, are painting this picture for us of creating a mikdash, creating a kodesh hakodashim, locating the shechina inside of our sukkos, and then doing some sort of avoda, ki'ilu korbanos with the dal of minim. Unbelievable, the way that all just comes together. So I think this is basically what Rav Hirsch is trying to do. He says over and over again, I think the Rav Soloveitchik has similar ideas in Halachic Man. He says when you fully apprehend, you fully appreciate the details of a mitzvah, the ideas that a mitzvah is trying to give over to you, that starts with reading the psukim, and it continues going into the Gemaras and seeing the details of the Gemara, the connections between different sugyas, or connections between different areas of Halacha that the Gemara and Chazal set up for us. That is the only way that you're really able to get a full picture or a full understanding of what Hashem wants us to be getting out of these mitzvos. So it's not just like, it's not finding a nice word connection or a chiasm here or there, saying, here's something that like this reminded me of that, and therefore I'm going to give a whole speech or build a whole yesod out of that one connection. Hashem wants us to appreciate the full picture of a mitzvah, and often there are going to be a lot of multiple aspects, right? We didn't exhaust the entire Gemara Sukkah just because we came up with five or six connections to Mikdash and three connections between Dal and Minim and Korbanos. There's a lot more going on there, and there's a lot more, I guess you can say, gold to be mined out of those sugyas. You try to get facets as they come. Appreciate that things are complex and there are multiple ideas that are kind of being interwoven. But if you're getting a full picture of the details of the halacha, that's really the only way to pull out the hashkafas haTorah that Hashem wants us to be getting out of it. We've said before, there are two things that are going on. Hashem wants us to build ourselves into specific people who embody or personify specific values. And He also wants us to impact the world in a very specific way. He wants us to set up a world using His values and ideals as the blueprints for the way we interact with society. So those are the two ways mitzvahs are meant to impact us, and that happens through the details. So let's do this. We're going to go into the first three sections of three categories of mitzvahs. This is letter 11. We're talking about Torahs, Mishpatim, and Chukim. If you got your Tanakh, see if we're going to basically give out a couple of, we're going to give up psukim, and we'll find those psukim inside, and then we'll say what mitzvos was referring to when he shows those psukim. So we're going to start with Toros. Toros are, take to heart as principles that should govern our lives the following truths that are revealed by history. So truth number one, Shmos Chaf Beis, Parakhaf Pasuk Beis. You also probably guessed this one. It's what would be the first truth that Hashem would want us to be aware of? Shmos 20-2. Well, good. The first one is Anochi, Hashem Elokecha. That God is your God, meaning the guide of your thoughts, feelings, words, and deeds, the mainspring of your whole life. So which part of Anochi, Hashem Elokecha is Hashem focusing on here? What? Exactly. It's actually not, it's not what you would have thought. It's Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem, not just like I'm a God. I am your God. Every single thing that I'm doing with you, everything that I'm telling you to do, asking you to do, it's because I am your personally involved God, the mainspring of your whole life. If you guys may not have known, I was a youth director in Albany, New York for the 3.5 years that I was NYU back in America. And one of the things I would do was Shabbat morning davening. We'd have Shabbos morning groups for the kids. So part of that is davening. We'd have a lot of fun with it, sing the songs and whatever it is. But when we got the Kriya Shema each week, we would stop and I'd say, guys, what are we really saying when we're saying Kriya Shema? And they'd say, like, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. I'm like, that's not English. That literally doesn't mean anything. I was dealing with kids who were old enough to understand this. So we tried to translate Shema into like real English, meaning the words that actually have meaning to us. So we said, instead of like, Hear, O Israel, we said, Shema Yisrael means, listen up, Jews, and I had them say it that way. We went around the table, listen up, Jews, and they loved it. So, Shema Yisrael, listen up, Jews, right? We're supposed to listen up to the following message. That Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem is, really means our God, but for each individual kid, I have them say, Hashem is my God, and again, with that inflection, with that tone, Hashem is my God. He's mine. He's a personal relationship with me and Hashem Echad, and there's only one of him. And again, that's a lot of good shtick, whatever it is. But we're translating Shema into something which actually means something to these kids. Listen up, Jews. Hashem is my God, and there's only one of him. These are the ideas that Shema is trying to tell you. So we refer on the very beginning of this. Sarah said, Dibros, that Hashem, Anochi Hashem, Elokecha, is very specifically your God. He's involved with your life. Next, Lo Yelecha makes a lot of sense. He talks about Yichud Hashem is step number 3. Going through these mitzvahs, if you see in Chorev, they match up pretty well with the mitzvahs he's describing in the beginning over here. Next, we have, let's take Dvarim Dalet Tes. Exactly, right? Yishamer Lecha Pen Tishkach. This is generally listed as one of the Sheish Lechiros, one of the things you're supposed to remember, not really as a mitzvah. But Rav Hirsch says, no, this is a full-fledged mitzvah. You need to remember exactly what happened at Har Sinai when we got the Torah. The way he presented it is that his will was revealed to you for this purpose and for all times. That the Matan Torah was something which wasn't just a one-time historical event. He was giving us the Torah, which tells us what Hashem wants from us for the rest of eternity. The way he presented that idea was the idea of Yichud Hashem, that all his creatures are his servants, and you too must join their ranks to labor in his service. So these make a lot of sense. They're kind of intuitive. Avas Hashem is going to show up. Yiras Hashem is going to show up. Achdus Hashem, Emunah Hashem. All these things are the fundamentals, the fundamental principles that are supposed to govern our lives and the truths that are revealed by history. Let's go over to Devarim 10:12. 10:12. It's really interesting how many of these come from specifically Sefer Dvarim. That's pretty unique to this category. Obviously, all the other mitzvahs are going to be spread out throughout the book. But Dvarim 10:12. And then goes on a whole list of all, basically our entire responsibility. He said, Rav Hirsch says that you are to ennoble your inner life so as to cleanse it of anything that might detract from your holy mission. That's not how I would have, explained the mitzvah of Ma Hashem Elokecha, Shoel Me'imach, Ki'im Li'iras Hashem Elokecha. I would have given that as the makor for Yiras Hashem. But Rav Hirsch here, at least in the 19 letters, has that as the ennobling our inner life, so as to cleanse it of anything that might detract from your holy mission. Divesting yourself of pride and lust. Making sure that your priorities are basically in the right place, so that everything that you're working towards in life is not just like getting more money, getting more pleasure, but rather actually working on fulfilling your mission, using the bag of talents that God gave you to do what you assume that Hashem wants you to actually take care of. Then this is really interesting. He has, Lo sikom v'lo sitoris b'nei amecha, v'yahavta l'recha kamocha ani Hashem. Lo sikom v'lo sitoris, don't take revenge, don't hold a grudge against other Jews, makes it into like this top category, the first principles or the ideals that Hashem wants us to put into practice in Jewish life. Why do you think that mitzvah, I would have put that as like a Benonim L'Chavera mitzvah. Why is Lo Sikom V'lo Sitor, together with the Yachal Rechach Mofa, why is that put on such a pedestal? What do you think is coming out of that? Was coming out of that mitzvah? What perspective is coming out of lo si kom lo si tor that bumped it up into this section of the mitzvahs? Any thoughts?
The goal of us being part of the world.
What?
The goal of us being part of the world.
Okay, number one, being part of the world, that's important. But I guess what perspective comes out of saying, I'm not going to hold a grudge, I'm not going to hold something that somebody else did to me? Why do you think we might be told not to hold a grudge? For what reason? I mean, like, somebody messed me over. Why can't I be accredited? And why can't I just, like, hold on to that for a long time? So it could be, again, this is all conjecture, but it could be that if you really have internalized everything that we've set up until now, that Hashem is the one who's running the world, He's the one who's running not just your life, but everybody's life, and He's the one who's kind of setting up the chessboard to make sure that whatever happens to you was supposed to happen to you, then just because somebody else seems like He messed you over, if you really have this understanding that Hashem's the one running the world, then that's not really what happened. Hashem set up a situation where that guy seems to have messed you over, but it's really Hashem saying, hey, Jew, listen up. This is what I'm doing to you. I'm trying to give you a message. Listen to what I'm trying to tell you. So it's not that guy who messed you over. It's Hashem sending you a message. If that's really the perspective that you have, and that's a fundamental life-altering perspective, how do you look at the events that happened to you? How do you look at other people being involved in your life? If that's the perspective that you have, then of course, lo si kom lo si toras b'nei amecha. Of course, v'yach lo rechach kamocha. How could you hold something against somebody else if they were just acting as like the mouthpiece of the speaker system for Hashem sending out a message to you? So it's not just like a nice ben adam idea. This is really fundamental. This is really asking you, how do you see what happens to you in your life? Are these things which like just the world is Hesperville and things are happening, so if this guy messed you over, I should be upset at him? Or no, Hashem has set up the world in a specific way and He wants me to recognize that. He wants me to take lessons from the things that that are happening to me. So we'll close that off. That's the section of Toros. A couple of other ones that show up: Lo sisna sachicha bil vavecha. The gaiva anava refers to as his mitzvah lashon hara. Tamim tia in Hashem elokecha, saying that everything that happens to you in your entire life, your multifaceted work, career, family, love, relationships, everything that happens to you should be dedicated back towards Hashem. Everything that you get was from Hashem, so everything that you give should be given back towards Hashem. Kedoshim Tiyu. These are some of the mitzvahs that Refersh has in this category of Toros. Just one more time. It's statements concerning how we're meant to relate to Hashem or interact with the world. Principles set out in a way we can understand and apply practically. Next is the section which is most intuitive, makes the most sense. That's the section of Mishpatim. This is justice, respect all other people, respect their property, respect their lives. It's the right to truth, happiness, peace of mind, freedom, honor, and a peaceful existence. Don't abuse legal power. A lot of the mitzvahs here are just basic society mitzvahs. Respect for the human body. Don't murder. Don't beat people up. Don't steal. Don't like injure them. Don't cut off their limbs. Respect other people's property. Don't hold on to wages that you owe. Don't mess people over when they did you a favor. Falsehood, lying, flattery, and hypocrisy. All these different things which would otherwise pervert justice. Eidos, I think, shows up in Mishpatim. The idea behind witnesses or the whole legal system shows up in Mishpatim. Everything which protects and preserves justice between you and other people is a mitzvah which fits into the category of Mishpatim. Even within these mitzvos, Refersh points out that there are some individual details which you may not have expected, and if it was humans coming up with these mitzvos, we never would have included. Even this section, even this category, are things which were meant to be taking ideals from the Dvar Hashem and seeing Hashem saying, this is how I want you to set up the world, this is how I want you to set up society, and we're implementing that, we're applying that to the world that we live in. It fits very nicely with the way the Rav talks about halachic man. He has his three categories of people: homo religiosus, right, religious man, cognitive man, and then halachic man, kind of in the center. The way halachic man works, different than both religious man and cognitive man, is he sees this unbelievably beautiful ideal world built up in the heavens, where if you just follow the halachic process, you don't have to deal with, like, in physics, you have to deal with like air resistance and wind resistance and gravity. You can just like ignore all that stuff and just say, in a perfect world, this is what the halachic system would look like. It's a city built in the clouds. And then halachic man doesn't try to jump from this world and get into that far-off world of ideals and like beautiful pictures. Instead, he tries to take that ideal world up in the heavens and bring that down here, right? It's the opposite of Messiah Shasharim. Messiah Shasharim says our whole goal is to get Hana and Olam Haba to be Davik Hashem. And how do we do that? Oh, like Nebuch, we have to live through this world and earn the star and like make ourselves into the people who will get that star and get that Davikus. He's aiming for the other world. The Rav is saying, no, to like Pum Fakir, we're going the other way. We're trying to take this amazing world that's up there, this halachic, ideal, perfect world, and bring that down here in the area of Mishpatim, that's taking what Hashem says is the ideal for humans interacting with each other and make that happen in our world. The reason it's so easy to understand is because we're dealing with other humans, people who are on our level. We're able to take ourselves out of our own little like mindset and put ourselves in their shoes. What would this look like if I was in their position and this was happening to me? It makes a lot of sense. It's very, very intuitive. The next section, Chukim, is going to be taking that exact same idea, justice towards others, but instead of other people on the same plane as us, instead of justice to other humans, Rehersh describes Chukim as justice towards anything below or non-human creatures. The reason it's so difficult and the reason Chukim gets such a bad rap is like, oh, they're the non-rational ones, where they're the ones we're never going to be able to understand. We brought the Makoros last week. Chukim do have reasons. Shlomo understood them. Moshe understood them. They do have reasons behind them. There's an idea there. It's just not as intuitive because we're not dealing with somebody we can put into... We can't get ourselves into their shoes. We're just working on different planes. If we were able to understand them, right? For Shlomo, who understood the language of the trees and the language of the animals and everything like that, he was able to understand. If we were able to put ourselves in their shoes, then these chukim would suddenly make a lot more rational sense. But the same justice that you owe to man should be shown to every lower being, from the earth which bears everything to vegetation and the animal world. It's because Hashem created everything and says, I have a use, I have a purpose for everything. I have a purpose for you, little human, and I have a purpose for like this tree or this leaf and this bird and this animal. The same way you don't want your potential being wasted, don't waste their potential. Don't mess around with the rest of the world that I created. The very first one that he talks about, which stresses this idea in such a strong way, is Baal Tashka. So if we open up to, what is it, Devarim. Yeah, Devarim 20:19, Chaf Yud Tes. You set up right. You set up a siege against another. You set up a siege. You're at war with another community, with another city. Don't cut down their fruit trees. And this is extended to be the much more overarching halacha of Baal Tashkas. Don't waste anything that was created. And when you look into the halachas, you see. Let's say you're dealing with a fruit tree which is not really producing much fruit anymore. It's really, really old and barely producing fruit on the one hand, and then like. Beautiful cedar trees, which are like super, super valuable and great for building houses and stuff and telephone poles. Which one should you cut down? You need the wood. Should you cut down the fruit tree or should you cut down the cedar tree? Which one is the more valuable one? Which one has more potential to give to the world? So Rehersh says, looking at the halacha, you may have thought, based on the psukim, it's the fruit tree is what needs to be saved. The pasuk says, don't cut down the fruit trees. I won't cut down the fruit trees. But in this specific instance, since the other tree is the more valuable one, you're getting more of it, there's more of a tatas for that other tree than the fruit tree in this situation. To be Mekayim Baal Tashkas in this case, you dafka would cut down the fruit tree, because it's important not just to read the psukim, you need to understand what are the details of the halacha. Here's another cool one, Devarim Chav Beis Vav. Shiluach HaKein was the subject of the Ramban that we saw last week when we were dealing with the whole idea of Tanya Mitzvos Meirosh. Shiluach HaKein is, again, respect the relationship that you have with other animals, with other creations. The way Rehersh describes that one in Chorev is a mother bird who's trying to take care of its young, who's trying to take care of the eggs, flying over her nest. She's in her full Tafkid right there at that moment, she's fulfilling her purpose in creation. Hashem created a mother bird to take care of her animals. So if you were to show up and just take the mother bird right there as she's trying to fulfill her own Tafkid, you're demonstrating disrespect for other parts of creation fulfilling their Tafkid in life, fulfilling the reason for which Hashem created them. Hashem says that's inappropriate. What do I want you to do? I want you to take the bird to show that you could take it if you wanted to, and then shaleach to shalach, send it away, demonstrate your respect for other parts of creation, fulfilling their tafkid, not just you fulfilling your own tafkid. In an amazing perspective at everything around us, right? Every single blade of grass, every single rolling thunder, thunderbolt, the way it first says it in the letters, everything has a tachlis. It's not a freely chosen tachlis, the way humans are meant to be, but respect the fact that everything has a purpose, and it's not up to you to just walk into the world and destroy things or take things just because you want to. He also talks about respecting your own person, your body, right? Don't give yourself a tattoo. Don't cut yourself. Don't rip out your hair. Don't do all these things which show disrespect for your body as the horse for the rider, as the physical embodiment of your neshama, which allows you to actually be active in the world. And finally, respect your power of speech. I think in Chori, the way he first says it, is Hashem is the one who holds your speech against yourself. It's the same idea that if you see Hashem as the makor of everything, the source of everything, that's what forces you to respect your own power of speech. That's nedarim, that's nivul peh, that's using your language in positive ways. Those are the three categories of mitzvahs that we spoke about. Number one, toros, the values and ideals that we're supposed to put into practice is like the big picture stuff, the Nochi Hashem, Yira, Ava, all those things. Putting that into practice in like real tachlis mitzvahs as opposed to just like nice machshavti ideas. Mishpatim is justice between man and his friend. Very simply, makes a lot of sense because we can put ourselves in other people's shoes. And finally, chukim, again, justice, setting up a world where everything follows the rules, not just like the rules of nature, but also the rules of yashrus, of I guess righteousness, to those things which are below humans, or not in the same plane as other people. And that's because Hashem is the one who created everything and gave everything a tachlis, gave everything a tafkid, asked us all to be involved in the world in a positive way, and was meant to respect that through the categories of chukim.
There are more categories now.
Three. Yeah. I think the next couple of letters is going to go slower instead of running 3-3.